ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नमः विष्णु पदाय कृष्ण प्रसन्नाय बुद्धाय श्रीमान् भक्तवदान्त स्वामी इति नामने नमस्ते सरस्वत देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारणे नर्वशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्यदेश तरणे श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवसृष्टि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा कृष्ण कृष्ण हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे Pray from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 31, Verse 7. Tanna prajotaya adhyatma jnanam tatvarta darshanam yena anjasa tarasyamo dustaram bhava sagaram tanna prajotaya adhyatma Jnanam tatvarta darshanam Inanjasa tarasyamo Dastaram bhava sagaram Therefore, na, for us, pradotya, kindly awaken, adhyatma, transcendental, jnanam, knowledge, tattva, absolute truth, artha, for the purpose of, darshanam, philosophy, yena, by which, anjasa, easily, tarasyama, we can cross over, dustaram, formidable, bhavasagaram, ocean of nescience. Translation, dear master, kindly enlighten us in transcendental knowledge which may act as a torchlight by which we may cross the dark nescience of material existence. Purport, the Pracetas requested Narada to enlighten them in transcendental knowledge. Generally, when a common man meets a saintly person, he wishes to get some material benediction. However, the Pracetas were not interested in material benefit, for they had enjoyed all this sufficiently. Nor did they want the fulfillment of their material desires. They were simply interested in crossing the ocean of nescience. Everyone should be interested in getting out of these material clutches. Everyone should approach a saintly person in order to be enlightened in this connection. One should not bother a saintly person to get blessings for material enjoyment. Generally, householders receive saintly persons to get their blessings, but the real aim is to become happy in the material world. Asking such material benedictions is not recommended in the Shastras. Translation, dear master, kindly enlighten us in transcendental knowledge which may act as a torchlight by which we may cross the dark nescience of material existence. So here we have a good example of how a person should approach a spiritually enlightened person. In this case, of course, we have Narada Muni, who's not just enlightened, he's actually a Shaktivesh avatar of the Lord, an eternal associate of the Lord with eternal powers. Not only has got eternal powers given by the Lord, and therefore very special, but also this particular Shakti is the Shakti of Bhakti. And so he's not just any old person who has powers, and not particular powers, but the power of Bhakti, which is most dear to the Lord. So therefore he's a very special person. So he can act as guru very nicely. And the Prachetas, of course, realize this. The Prachetas are also very highly qualified. They were qualified for being born in the line of Manus, and they're also qualified because they were extremely detached from everything in the material world. So it is by the great mercy of the Supreme Lord that the Prachetas get this opportunity to meet Narada. So they are highly qualified, and Narada is highly qualified. So their approach is very exemplary. So as Prabhupada mentions in the purpose, they do not ask, oh, please give me blessings so I can have a good marriage, or please give me blessings so I can have lots of money, or please give me blessings so I can have graduate from the best university in India, or get into IIT, or get a PhD or whatever. They don't ask for these things. So the topic is spiritual. So here we have Adhyatma Gyanam, Tattva Artha Darshanam, and this is all very philosophical and spiritual, completely non-material things they're asking. And of course, if we see examples of like Rupa and Sanatan when they approached Lord Chaitanya, they didn't ask for material things also. They say, just get us out of this material world and bring us to the feet of Krishna. And of course, see this also in Hari Bhakta Vilas, which says you should go to the Guru, and then what do you ask him? You don't ask him for material things. You ask him for spiritual benefit. So, and of course, the Upanishads say the same thing. We go to the teacher for spiritual knowledge, not for material things. Nevertheless, people, of course, in the material world have motivations to take the spiritual life. And therefore we see in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says four types of people come to me. Some of them have very gross material desires, but at least they come to the Supreme Lord. And similarly, they'll come to a guru or spiritual person for, and they have some material desires also, and some spiritual things. So it's a mixture in many cases. Either get rid of my suffering, mental or physical, or give me a little more enjoyment than I got. I don't have enough enjoyment. So these are two primary motivations, which are material. And of course, more subtle, we have people looking for knowledge, jigasus. So they want some knowledge, not particularly maybe bhakti, but they're interested in knowledge itself, and they're more philosophically inclined, like the sages of Naimisharanya. And of course we have people that are actually jnani. They actually have an understanding already, and therefore they're interested. So they're, of course, more dear to Krishna than the others. So generally people will approach spiritual life with some desires of some sort. We can't expect them to be completely pure in the beginning, and that's why they're in this material world, because they are impure. Nevertheless, we have to realize that the difference between spiritual life and material life, and not mix them up. If we don't have that clear understanding, then our path of spiritual life will be rather difficult. And that is why, of course, we have the 10th aparad, which sounds a little strange as an aparad to have material attachments. Everyone has material attachments, so everyone's committing aparad. So the meaning of that is, of course, that if we actually take to the process of bhakti and we approach devotees and gurus and other spiritual persons, and we ask for knowledge, etc., we have to have an intention of giving up all the anartas and all the attachments. Because when we get the teachings, we understand very clearly that material attachments are unfavorable. They're an obstacle to our advancement. So if we have no desire to give up those material attachments and we stubbornly hold on to them, in spite of the fact that Bhagavad Gita will say, give up your attachments, or Srimad Bhagavatam will say, give up your attachments, still, you say, oh, well, that doesn't really matter so much. Then this becomes an obstacle, a great obstacle, and you can't advance. Now, the example, of course, is given of the boatman. So the wedding party at night time was very eager to go to another village up the river. So they hired a boatman. And very eagerly they thought, very nice, we'll have a party all night, and then we'll go to sleep in the boat, and then in the morning we'll pay the boatman and he'll pull up the river and we'll be at the next village and we can attend the wedding. So a very nice thing. We'll just won't waste any time this way. We just sleep on the boat and we'll end up at the proper place in the morning time. So they bargained with the boatman, paid some money, got on the boat at night, had a good time, and they all went to bed. And I thought, yes, the boatman is there all night pulling up the river like this. Morning, we'll be there. So they went to bed with that intention. They woke up in the morning and woke up, and then gradually the mist lifted, and they looked around and thought, where's the village? Where's the village? And they looked around and said, we're in the same place. Well, then they said, how's that? And they said, okay. They went to the boatman, you've been sleeping all night. And the boatman said, no, I've been working all night. I've been pulling up the river. And then someone looked in the thing and they saw, oh, the anchor is still on the... So he's pulling all night and not going anywhere. So the idea there is that we hold on to our material desires so tightly, in spite of the fact that we do the bhakti. What happens? We don't go anywhere. Stay in the same place. So then if we say, oh, bhakti is not a nice process because I don't go anywhere, I'm not advancing, we're just finding fault with bhakti when actually it's our fault. We made no attempt to give up the desires. Of course, bhakti itself is so wonderful and powerful that it destroys all material desires, and it destroys karmas, and it destroys ignorance, it destroys every obstacle on the path of bhakti. But, again, if we don't want to get anything destroyed, then this is the problem, and bhakti does not have the proper effect. In other words, if we have offense while we're doing bhakti, it tends to negate the bhakti itself, so it's no longer bhakti. And therefore, that's why nothing happens, and we don't advance. There's no bhakti anymore. So we're doing the activities of bhakti, but that's all. And the real bhakti is not there. So therefore, the effect and the progress is not there. So, we do have to approach in the proper way and have an understanding of what is spiritual life. And that means it is the opposite of material life. And that is what is indicated here, where the Prachetas say that give us the truth or the Gyanam by which very easily we can cross over the ocean of material existence, which is difficult to cross or impossible to cross. Okay? So normally, yes, material world is impossible to get out of. But here they're saying, give us the process by which easily we can get out. So there is a process that Narada has by which you can get out. And this involves knowledge. Tattva Artha Darshanam. A particular type of knowledge will get you out of this material world. So that's what they're asking for. They say, we don't want to stay in this material world. And of course we see that actually they were very renounced. So they weren't approaching Narada Muni to help me fulfill my material desires. They were doing the opposite. Let me get rid of my material desires. This was their basic approach. From one point of view, of course, this is a little peculiar because This is the attitude also of the Gyani. I do not like the material world. I want to get liberation. Okay? So, what is the fruit of Jnana? One gets out of the material world. One crosses over the material existence. So, this looks also a little bit like that because we also have Jnana here. And not only Jnana, but Adhyatma Jnana. Which generally Adhyatma Jnana means, you know, knowledge of Brahman. So, that type of knowledge, instead of saying, teach us the process of bhakti by which we can get prema. That would be a more ideal question for to direct to Narada Muni, who's the incarnation of bhakti. Give us the method of bhakti by which we can get prema. But here they're saying, give us knowledge by which we can get out of ignorance of the material world. That looks more like they're asking for jnana. Which is a little strange. So, of course, we will find in the Bhagavatam also that often it speaks to spiritual life in terms of negating the material world also. So, this of course is an effect of bhakti as well. You can get out of the material world. In fact, easier, you can get out of the material world easier by bhakti than you can by jnana or yoga. And of course, karma doesn't even get you out of the material world. So yes, bhakti does that, but the getting out of the material world is a secondary effect of bhakti. It's not the goal of bhakti at all. The goal of bhakti has nothing to do with this. If we get attached to getting out of the material world, then we have jnana misra bhakti, which is not ideal. The real bhakti is not to have any desires for any type of liberation. Not for Sayuja, not for Salokya and Sarsti and all these. In other words, we don't want to have a spiritual body even. We don't want to have a spiritual loka. Which we think, oh, that's very nice to go to the spiritual world, but even that is considered to be mukti. And the devotee himself does not demand these things. All he is eager for is service to the Lord. That's liberation for a devotee. Not getting a spiritual body, not going to a spiritual planet, not getting spiritual powers. These things are all mukti type of liberation. But the real goal of the devotee is simply to serve the Supreme Lord, which we're also doing in the process of sadhana. So, in other words, the process of bhakti is eternal. I do bhakti now, and my aspiration is to do bhakti eternally. The only difference, of course, is as we progress, that bhakti becomes perfect and pure and intense. It reaches its highest stage, that's all. And that, then it's called prema. So, therefore, the getting out of the material world is simply a side effect of bhakti, which will happen. So, if you perfect bhakti, all karma and all desires and all anartas and ignorance, avidya, all disappear. But simultaneously, bhakti grows and matures into fruit, into prema. And with that prema, of course, the devotee doesn't ask for it, but then the Lord gives. Spiritual body, spiritual world. You go to the spiritual world, you have a spiritual body, you have spiritual service to the Lord, you have spiritual powers, everything is there. Favorable to one's service to the Lord. So, these are all accompanying factors, but the goal of the devotee is simply, let me serve the Lord perfectly and purely and intensely to satisfy Him. That is all. So that, of course, has to be understood in the very beginning of the bhakti process, and therefore, Rupa Goswami in the Nectar Devotion there, the very beginning, has this nice definition that the definition of bhakti is it is free of any other desire except the desire to serve the Lord and please the Lord. That's all. So, So why then do the Prachetas ask like this? Give us jnana, ajatma jnana, by which we can get out of the material world. So one reason, of course, is convention. This is a convention we'll see often in the Upanishads, for instance. Many people will think, oh, it all means jnana. But if you look at our acharyas, how they say, no, that vidya, that knowledge, that jnana doesn't mean the jnana of the jnanis who simply study about, you know, I'm not the body. No, this means knowledge of Brahman. And what is Brahman? Brahman is Bhagavan. And so real knowledge means knowledge of the Supreme Lord and our relationship with the Supreme Lord, and consequently the process of bhakti. That is real knowledge. That is real vidya. That is real jnana. So therefore, when it says you get mukti by jnana, that doesn't mean impersonal jnana. It means actually by bhakti. You get mukti. And what is mukti? Mukti does not mean that you merge into Brahman. That liberation means you get prema. And you establish your relationship with Krishna, and you serve Krishna eternally. That's what it means. So, in other words, these words, though they apparently they look impersonal in intention, actually they have another meaning also for the Vaishnavas. Not only here, but in the Upanishads and Vedanta Sutra also, they have another meaning. So, therefore, though it apparently looks like jnana, actually we can take this as actually bhakti. And if we look at the reply when Narada Muni actually begins speaking, then immediately he says, instead of talking about adhyatma jnana, he talks about becoming a devotee of the Supreme Lord. That's his first answer. Success in life is to be a devotee of the Lord. So he doesn't talk about adhyatma or such. He talks about Supreme Lord, Bhagavan, and the jiva's relationship to him. So, we can say the questions are conventional according to the context of Upanishads, etc., and Vedas and sages in the past. They would speak in a manner like this. But as for Narada Muni, of course, he understands the convention also, and then he replies, what is the actual meaning behind this according to high realization and direction to the jivas of the material world. So therefore, though it looks apparently like jnana, the impersonal jnana, it actually means bhakti, because this we see from the answer given by Narada Muni. And of course, we should not expect the Prachetas would be impersonal jnanis also. Because their experience has been experiences with the Supreme Lord, and all about devotion also in the past. And the instructions given to them previously were also instructions of bhakti, not of impersonal jnana. So therefore we have to understand not by the particular words but by the context what the real meaning is. So this is how we have to go through the scriptures in general. We cannot simply take words and take them literally all the time. We have to understand the context and see if there's contradiction with other places, and this way we can actually come to a proper conclusion on what the intentions are of the words, what they actually mean, and what is the intention and the quality of the persons asking those words. So in this case we see that the Prachetas are actually devotees of the Lord, and they recognize Narada Muni as a great devotee who can teach about bhakti. So though the question looks like jnana, actually there's a question on bhakti, and Narada Muni answers in that way. So though there are various processes mentioned in the Vedas, there is karma, there is jnana, there is yoga, and there is bhakti. All of these are mentioned in the Shrutis and in the Smritis, and therefore, in one sense, they are authorized, they are bona fide, they are scriptural processes. Still, we have to understand what are the purposes of these methods. We should not think that all the methods are the same and they all lead to the same goal equally. Yes, in one sense they do lead to the goal because they're mentioned in the scriptures, but we should not think they are equal. Yeah? So, it has been very carefully explained by our acharyas that the processes are sequential, and therefore there is superiority, and karma is at the bottom, and jnana is next. If one becomes highly qualified in karma and reaches sattva-gun, then one is qualified for jnana, and one can go on to yoga. And if one was highly qualified as a jnani and yogi, then one can go to bhakti. Okay? So what this means is that the gradual process of elevation is to take the jiva, human jiva, through the gunas, from tamogun sudra to sattvagun brahmana, over many, many lifetimes. Many, many lifetimes. It's a very, very gradual process, because the jiva is a very difficult learner, very difficult for him to progress. So he has to go very gradually from tamogun and gradually, by following a little rules, work his way up into vaisha category and get a mixture tamogun and rajagun, and follow a few more rules, and then gradually work his way up into kshatriya and becomes rajagun with a little sattvagun, and then gradually work up to sattvagun, and then he becomes brahminical. So the long process for the jiva to get up to sattvagun. And when he's qualified in sattva-gun, the quality of sattva-gun is prakash. Prakash means light, knowledge. What? It means knowledge of atma. You can understand the difference between body and soul. So you're qualified for jnana. And that's what jnana does. It distinguishes body from atma. So jnana is a sattva-gun process. And to make that more practical, then you can do yoga. Then, of course, the promise is liberation, get out of the material world. Yeah? So in this way, we have the Purush Arthas covered, Artha, Dharma, Kama, and then finally, Moksha at the top, with the brahminical persons studying Vedanta and understanding they're not the body, they're Atma. And then we get Moksha. Yeah? So then some people say, then it's complete. Those are the four Purush Arthas, so I'm complete, I get my Moksha and I'm complete. But of course, we see Lord Chaitanya said, no, there's the fifth goal. Prema. So that is where bhakti functions. Yeah? So once you go through tamogun, rajogun, sattvagun, you go through karma yoga, jnana yoga, stanga yoga, then you're ready for bhakti yoga. Yeah? So beyond getting liberated from the material world is the process of establishing a relationship with the Lord. So in other words, distinguishing body from soul and the soul from body, that is first level spiritual life. The spiritual, as opposed to karma yoga, which doesn't really... The aim is not to get out of the material world. The aim is to go to Svarga Loka or Brahma Loka. So that's not really spiritual. But it takes you to Sattva-gun, where you can begin to realize difference. So, jnana means distinguishing atma from body. So it is spiritual. But it's only first stage. Second stage is to understand Supreme Lord and relation of jiva to Supreme Lord. That is highest knowledge. Huh? So that, of course, is, that knowledge means process of bhakti. And its perfection or prayojana is prema. So therefore, all these processes are mentioned in the scripture, and they're all approved, because one can lead to the other, and gradually you can progress through karma yoga, jnana yoga, stanga yoga, and come to bhakti yoga. So, but they're not all equal. If we stop with karma yoga, we're still in the material world. If we stop with jnana yoga, we get mukti, but we don't get prema. And same with astanga yoga. So they're not complete processes. The complete process, if we want to complete the process, we have to come to bhakti eventually. So, this of course is the gradual process, and therefore they're all mentioned in the scriptures. But this process is also condemned by Narada Muni. When he met Vedavyas, and mentioned in the first canto of Bhagavatam, Vedavyas had written Puranas for the people in Tamogun, Puranas for the people in Sattva-gun, Puranas for the people in, all the gunas. So accordingly, Tamogun people worship Shiva, whatever. People in Rajagun worship Brahma, people in Sattvagun worship Vishnu. So catering to the different modes of nature, Vyasadeva wrote different scriptures and encouraged them in this way, which is typical of the Vedas, because we have, you know, karma yoga to take through the gunas, etc. So he recorded everything in the Vedas. And then Narada Muni says, not going to work in Kali Yuga. People are lazy, unintelligent, short-lived, etc. So they'll stick to one process, the easiest process possible, and they'll stick there and they won't go any further. They'll start in Tamogun and they'll stay in Tamogun, and they won't advance to Rajagun and Sattvagun. They won't give up one process and go to the higher process and go to the process. So even they won't get out of Karma Yoga to get to Jnana Yoga or Astanga Yoga and Bhakti Yoga. They'll stick in Karma Yoga and stick in the lowest guna, and they won't get out. So it's useless in Kali Yuga to recommend this gradual process. So what did he say? You make the process simple. How do we simplify the process? Just recommend bhakti, that's all. Only the highest process. So in other words, don't go through the gradual process, just do bhakti. Which is exactly what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita chapter 12, when Arjuna asked the question, what is better, to go through the process and go up through Brahman, or just do bhakti? And Krishna says, bhakti is easier. Just do bhakti. Don't go through the whole process of karma yoga, jnana yoga, astanga yoga, and then bhakti yoga. Just do bhakti yoga. That's all. So that is the conclusion, that though these processes are there, Kali Yuga, we will not do that. We'll just do bhakti. That's all. Yeah? So, yes, even in Bhagavatam, we'll have whole sections devoted to karma yoga and varnashram, other sections devoted to jnana, especially chapter in Canto 11, and yoga, we'll see in Canto 3, and also in Canto 11, very detailed yoga descriptions are given. But, actually, it's not for us. Why mention? Because, same as Bhagavad Gita goes to Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Astanga Yoga, and Bhakti Yoga. It mentions everything because it's in the Vedas. We respect the Vedas, but understand, it's not the process we follow. We cannot do this gradual elevation. Huh? Let us only do one process, bhakti only. So, Narada Muni told Vedavyas this, and what did Vedavyas do? Then he revised one of the Puranas, and it became the Bhagavatam as we know it. And the Bhagavatam's purpose is to glorify bhakti. Not only bhakti, but glorify Krishna. Not Vishnu, and not Nrisimha or anybody else, but Krishna. Why? Because Krishna is Swayam Bhagavan. Of all the forms of the Lord, Krishna manifests all the qualities of Bhagavan in the most wonderful way. Therefore, he's the most attractive. And therefore, the people of Kali Yuga will get benefit from that. The most attractive form, people will become attracted to that. So therefore, the Bhagavad presents bhakti as the highest process, and bhakti to Krishna as the best type of bhakti. That is the final conclusion of everything. So, therefore the scriptures will speak of many things, but we have to see what is the final import of scriptures. So, of course, Bhagavatam is meant to be the final conclusion of everything. Vedavyas divided up the Vedas into four, assigned different students to take charge of each section of the Vedas, the Yajur Veda, etc., Rig Veda. Then he wrote the Puranas to explain the Vedas. He wrote the Vedanta Sutra to explain the Upanishads, which are the Gyan section of the Vedas. What do the Upanishads mean? So he wrote the Brahma Sutras to explain that. And of course it's too difficult for most people of Kali Yuga to understand that. And then he condemned all the Narada, when he condemned all the Puranas also, that it's going to mislead people, because we have Tamogun Puranas, Rajagun Puranas, Sattvagun Puranas. People won't know who to worship, or they'll choose the wrong worship and they won't get out of that. So, though he wrote the Puranas and he wrote the Vedanta Sutra, and he also wrote Mahabharata, again, like the Puranas for the people of Kali Yuga, and in that we have Bhagavad Gita. So, out of all of that, then finally he said, make things clear in the Bhagavatam. So therefore, that's the Bhagavatam is summation of all the scriptures. So necessarily have everything in there. Have the Karma Yoga, Gyan Yoga, Astanga Yoga, everything in that. Have all the forms of the Lord there also. But the final intention is only to present bhakti as the process. Bhakti is the real spiritual process. Bhakti is a complete spiritual process. And the form to worship is Krishna. He is the manifestation of all wonderful qualities of the Supreme Lord. So that becomes very simple, in other words. So we don't really need philosophy, though there are sadarshanas to go through the Vedas and give us all sorts of philosophical arguments on what is truth. Finally, it comes down to something very simply. We have jivas, and we have Krishna. And we have a material world, and we have to get out of our conditioning, and we do that by the process of bhakti, and we perfect that bhakti, and we end up with prema, and we serve the Lord eternally. That's all. Simple conclusion. So we don't need all the words in one sense, but to make us understand that, then we have all these stories and histories and whatever. And so many things. And of course we have to follow the convention of a Purana and have all the subject matters, and we have to follow the conventions of having Karma Yoga, Gyan Yoga, Astanga Yoga, and Bhakti Yoga, because that's all Vedic. But we should never miss the conclusion. And the conclusion is finally just be a devotee. time's up. Anyway, the process is even made simpler. Bhakti itself is simple because it surpasses the gunas. You don't have to come to sattva-gun to start bhakti. You have to come to sattva-gun to do jnana or yoga. You cannot do it in the lower modes. The process of bhakti you can do in any mode, whether you're sattvic, rajasic, or tamasic, you can start the process. So that is the greatness of bhakti, the power of bhakti. So Bhagavatam actually, in the third canto at the end, it glorifies the process of bhakti, because just half chanting the name of the Lord, half chanting, not even complete chanting the name of the Lord, half chanting the name of the Lord even, is so wonderful that even the most fallen human being immediately surpasses the person in sattva-gun. That's the power of bhakti, the name of the Lord. So in bhakti we have many processes, but the Bhagavatam glorifies the name of the Lord. Of course, we see that even in the story of Ajamil. He didn't have bhakti. He accidentally chanted the name, not of Krishna, but Narayana. And all of his karmas were destroyed. The first time he named his son Narayana, I name you Narayana. And then all of his karmas were destroyed. That is the power of the Lord's name. So, if that is so, if one chants with devotion, how much more effect there will be? So in other words, destruction of karma and getting out of the material world is not very significant, because chanting Hare Krishna once gets you out of the world. So anyway, therefore, in bhakti the name is very, very powerful process. And Chaitanya has come and distributed the chanting of the name, not only the name of the Lord, but the name of Krishna. That name is the highest name, as Krishna is Swayam Bhagavan. The name of Krishna also is Swayam Bhagavan. So it's the most attractive name, and therefore has the most power also of all the names of the Lord. As we know, Vishnu has 1,000 names, but 1,000 names of Vishnu is equal to one name of Rama, and one name of Rana is equal to one name of Krishna. 3 names of Rama is equal to one name of Krishna. So therefore, the name of Krishna is most powerful or most wonderful spiritually. Why? Because the same as Krishna, and Krishna is Swayam Bhagavan, and he manifests all the wonderful qualities of the Lord. Which doesn't mean that the others are not Supreme Lord. They're also Supreme Lord. But in that particular form, they don't manifest all those qualities in their pastimes with their devotees, that's all. And Krishna does. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was mercifully presented the Hare Krishna mantra as a form of sadhana for the people of Kali Yuga. And as we know, the chanting of the name doesn't require any qualification. Anybody can do it. Anybody can get effect. And if you chant with faith, then you can get the result, which is prema. But more remarkable even than that is that the name also is not just Krishna. Lord Chaitanya was very clever. So he's also the name of Radha there in Hare. So not Krishna's not alone. So therefore, he made very sure that our realization of Krishna is realization of Radha Krishna. So therefore, we have Hare Krishna, and not just Krishna's name. So in other words, not only we realize Krishna, but we also get the opportunity to realize the highest rasa of Krishna, that is Madhurya rasa. And of course, the Madhurya rasa, the highest level is Radha and Krishna. So that is the special mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Therefore, he's called most munificent Mahavadanya, because he allows the fallen, unqualified jivas of Kali Yuga to have access to the highest rasa of Krishna, which nobody else does. No other form of the Lord does. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu does that. So anyway, therefore we're very fortunate to have that process of Nam Sankirtan and chanting the name of Radha and Krishna in the process of bhakti through Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So that finally is the process. So we don't need philosophy. As Lord Chaitanya says, Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Kevalam. Just chant the Hare Nama, that's all finished. Nothing else is required. But qualification is, again, like this, we have to be approached with the idea of purity. We may not be pure, but at least we have to understand that we can't take all of our material desires with us. We have an intention of getting rid of all of this. We also have to understand the difference between Jiva and Supreme Lord. Tattva Artha Darshana. We have to get the tattva straight. We have to get the philosophy straight. So we need some instruction. We can't speculate. We need the Shastra. We need devotees. We need Guru to give us the proper clarification of what is Jiva, what is Krishna, what is God, and how is Krishna, Swayam Bhagavan. We need that also. And even in Swayam Bhagavan, why is Krishna Krishna? Why is he different from everybody else? Then we have to understand the special qualities of Krishna also. And that, of course, is presented in 10th Canto Bhagavatam with the description of the Leela of Krishna. So, therefore, yes, we chant the name, but we also need knowledge, jnana. But that's not impersonal jnana. This is Bhagavat jnana that we need. We need Bhagavat jnana, we need knowledge of the process also. So that is what accompanies the chanting of the name and brings about its perfection. Okay, I think we're finished. Hare Krishna. I guess. He's got a question.
Well. Thank you very much, Maharaj. I see a paradox which was there throughout your lecture. You addressed it to some extent, but I still see the paradox from the story you gave of the boatman rowing the boat with the anchor down. And mentioning that we shouldn't perform bhakti with the anchor down. The material attachments that we have to separately uproot those attachments. But then you said, however, the nature of performing bhakti is that it also purifies those desires automatically. And you ended your lecture with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's process, Chetodapanama Marjanam. That just by chanting, that should be enough. So. What is the answer? Is it do we have to separately strive to give up those attachments, or do we have can we have the faith that just by engaging in bhakti yoga, those will be taken care of and the Lord will remove them?
So it is we can never do other processes, and that's made clear also in Nectar Devotion, where Rupa Goswami says that vairagya is not an anga of bhakti. And other things are not angas of bhakti, actually, because bhakti gets everything. It accomplishes everything. So it accomplishes detachment, it accomplishes knowledge, it accomplishes everything. So we don't separately cultivate things other than bhakti. Nevertheless, we do have things which are favorable to bhakti. We do things favorable to bhakti when we avoid unfavorable things. So obviously things like sinful activities are not favorable for bhakti because they increase our material attachments. And if we try to increase our material attachments and simultaneously go to bhakti, we're trying to go in two opposite directions, so it doesn't work. So we also have to do things which are favorable to the process of bhakti, even though they're not directly bhakti. So one, of course, is we have to have some sort of detachment. So that is why qualification for bhakti is to be somewhat detached from material things, not too attached to material things. That's our qualification to do bhakti. So, yes, we have attachments, but that should not become a prominent aspect of our bhakti to simply, you know, get our material desires fulfilled. Now, we can do bhakti with attachment if it's bhakti is the major part. We can have percentages. 90% material things, 10% bhakti or whatever like this. And eventually where we get more bhakti and less material things, then we can say, yes, it's bhakti, but it'll be karma misra bhakti. So yes, that is permitted. And you can even get perfection that way. The Lord will be merciful and give you more than He gives to the jnani or the yogi. And you can even go to Vaikuntha. But your relationship with the Lord is very limited then. You have like Shantarasa or something. Or you get your nice spiritual body and you live in a nice palace in Vaikuntha and you can meditate on the Lord. But you don't personally develop a rasa with the Lord in direct service. That's the problem with those things. So yes, you can maintain those things and the Lord will be merciful to you. He will destroy those desires ultimately, but your bhakti will be weaker as a result. And if your desires are too strong, then actually it becomes the offense where you're actually trying to enjoy more and do the bhakti at the same time, then you may destroy your bhakti also.
The Haryashvas and the Shavalashvas went into austerities for the sake of producing children. Narad came to them and said, don't get involved in that maya, get out of the material world. And they never came back home, they never got married. Whereas the Prachetas asked Narad for the knowledge by which they could get out of this material world, and they ended up getting married. So, solve that one, please.
Yeah. So what does it mean? Yeah. Well, one, of course, is according to the, we can say, according to the inclination of the person, that Narada Muni may give different instructions. But ultimately, the instruction can be that it doesn't matter in the process of bhakti whether you're married or unmarried. In other words, whether you're a householder or a renunciate, you can still practice bhakti and you can still get perfection. So we're not the ashramas are external. And ultimately, it is one's surrender to Krishna. That's the main thing. So though not only Prachetas, but Priyavrata and so many other people were married, and so many other great devotees were married, but that is, we could say, their external, let's say, following custom or parental obligation or obligation to the population to rule the world or whatever. Or Ambarish is another example. But internally, they're completely attached to the Supreme Lord. So externally, they may follow one level of thing, but more important is their internal attachment to the Lord. Sometimes, of course, renunciation is favorable. But in other cases, the Lord may also will the person to take up grihastha life and set an example for others or whatever like that, as He does with the Manus and their descendants. So they may be pure devotees of the Lord, but nevertheless, they go through the process of marriage and whatever, they don't renounce. So, the Lord may have reasons, or Narada may have reasons, and of course the Prachetas were also in that line of kings, so they had to continue a dynasty, I suppose. That's another reason why. Somebody had to continue it. As in the case of Priyavrata also, he had to continue the line, so therefore, for that reason. But the Lord also gives blessings that if they follow the order of the Lord, everything is perfect, so they don't lose.
Just a quick one. We shouldn't desire Samipya Salokya, so that's good, but we have a magazine called Back to Godhead.
Well, as I said, these things automatically happen for the devotee, but that's not our primary motive.
I want to get to the spiritual world. That's not our motive. Our motive is to serve the Lord. That's the result, we can say. Okay, I think we better end here. Hare Krishna.